Chris, take a picture. Better choose right.
Yeah, make it look cool. Make us look cool. So, yeah.
This is not very confident about it. I took a picture.
He did take a picture. He's focused.
Chris Harry is the worst at taking pictures. I gave him my phone that one time. He gave me like 50 back, and none of them were in focus or anything. He forgot how to use it. All right. You ready?
Yeah. You want to intro it?
Yeah, okay. All
right.
Welcome to the Funny Stop Podcast, the official podcast of the Funny Stop Comedy Club in Cuyahoga Falls. I'm your host, Matt Brady, and joined with me, as always, is my co-host,
Devin.
That's Devin. And this week, we've got a special guest, a headliner all this week at the Funny Stop. We got Cleveland Bill Squire.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
It's Bill Squire, buddy.
Mr. Famous.
Mr. Famous, yeah, that's right.
Sitting here with a celebrity.
So, yeah, local celebrity. Like one of the lowest tier local celebrities there can be.
I don't know. We got some radio guys here.
We interviewed some local celebrities before, some other ones we've done this with.
I'll list them off. I want to see where I rank.
One of them was Marv Conner at one point because he's been listed as a local celebrity to judge. I don't know what you judged, but he was on things.
You just called your dad by his first name.
Yeah. Well, because I'm listening to
him. What was he supposed to call him? Dad Conner?
Papa Conner!
I would have liked that one.
Who else did we get?
I don't know. That was really going. I just knew that he was called a local celebrity.
It's a pretty new podcast, though, so that's fine.
Recently, I got to tell you this is good news. We just got accepted onto iTunes, so now you can subscribe to us.
Nice.
So we've made it.
Don't listen. Just subscribe.
Yeah.
That's how. But Bill, you've got a pretty good thing going on right now. We hear you, Monday through Fridays on the afternoon drive on what, WMMS?
Yes, on the Alan Cox Show. It's a great thing.
Alan Cox Show?
Yeah. It's one of the best things that's ever happened to me.
Really?
Yeah. It's a station I grew up listening to, which is cool. And then working with a guy like Alan, that's also cool because he's good at his job. Makes it really easy on me. So, I get to do stand-up a lot, too. So
that's not your first
great.
This isn't your first time on radio, though, right?
Well, I was on. I wasn't like paid to be on radio before this. I was on the Opie and Anthony Show. I won the Car Crash Comedy Contest way back.
That's the first time I heard you on there.
2012, and then I was actually on there. I think 2 years before that, like 2010, when they did it, and I did the Philadelphia one.
Mm-hmm.
And the one I won was 2012. Was in studio with the guys at SiriusXM, and that one went well. The one in Philadelphia was not good.
Was
it? Like, it was just bad. Because it was in front of a bunch of Philadelphia Opie and Anthony fans. And I was first. And I just went up there. And I thought I should play to the crowd. And turns out it was better to play to, like, Opie and Anthony and, like, the judges and stuff like that. And, like, Jim Norton's just looking at me going, sorry, man. Just, like just not as head. Like, I feel so bad for you right now. Because, like, he's a comic. He understands how terrible that is. Because the first thing I say, they're just like, just like screaming at you, not even giving you a chance, and you're just like, all right. Yeah.
Do you remember what the first thing you said was?
I did a joke. I don't do that well with girls, and I can't even remember how that joke goes. Oh no, it was like I got this one girl flowers once, and she freaked out at me. She's like, Phil, why'd you give me flowers? I didn't think of you that way. I didn't think of you as a friend. You're like an acquaintance, a distant acquaintance, and I like it that way. I was like, well, you're my mom, and it was Mother's Day. And it's an okay joke, but just as soon as I said, I don't do that well with girls, they're just like, fuck you, like just screaming at me. And I'm like, that's different.
A little bit. I went and saw Open Anthony live when they came to Cleveland a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, their fans are...
Once they settle in, they're fine, but if they smell blood in the water or they see that you're not doing anything that they like... And especially in Philadelphia,
yeah.
that's the place where Bill Burr, like the next night is when Bill Burr.
That was on the Virus Tour. Right?
Yeah, it was on the Virus Tour, and that was where he had that famous rant.
Yeah.
So like, I'm like, kind of glad I didn't get on that show. Like, if you won the comedy, the Car Crash Comedy, you got to do a set on that show, and it wouldn't have gone well.
Yeah, I remember watching that. Not just Bill's, but everyone's. Yeah, they kind of wanted everybody that audience.
Yeah, they were a little angry.
So you think you kind of missed the exposure on that, or you kind of dodged a bullet to come back a couple years
ago? I just wasn't ready. It was fine. It was like, you know, I did something, and I wasn't ready, and then I worked harder, and when I went back, I won, and that was good. And the guy that came in second place is Seton Smith, and he's on John Mulaney's show, so everything worked out.
And you're on local radio?
And I'm on local radio in Cleveland. So.
That's still good. That's a
bad thing. No, I'm happy about it, but it's just, I just like that Seton got on that show because he's a funny dude, so just funny. It's just like a funny thing to... Anytime someone, like, I've won contests, but, like, the people that I beat have gone on to bigger and better things. So,
so you're like the Kathy Griffin of comedy right now in Cleveland?
Oh.
You say that? Like, you're just like, you help everybody get there? Yeah,
I'm trying to. I'm actually, that's like my goal right now with this, is, you know, help make comedy like a thing that people always want to do in Cleveland, whether it's coming to clubs like the Funny Stop or just going to open mics at like bars and stuff, but especially the Funny Stop, because I know Pete really likes that. You know, Pete's always been a proponent of local talent, and he can be a little rough around the edges, but when it comes down to it, he gives guys more of a chance than any other club owner that I've ever met.
Well, speaking of giving people chances, I know you run a couple of good rooms up in Cleveland, though, and you always have rotating comics on there.
Oh, yeah, I need them. Like, there's no point in it being just a certain couple of guys, because I need as many talented people as possible so that we can have a strong comedy scene. Like, it doesn't help us if there's only 6 funny people in Cleveland. We need 100 funny people in Cleveland. We need as many funny people as possible so that every time someone comes out to Barrio or here at the Funny Stop or, you know, wherever, they're seeing someone they haven't seen before, and that person's doing well. Mm-hmm. You know, tonight at the Funny Stop with, you know, Josh and Devin and Zachariah, Rob and Chris, like, those guys are all really funny, and a lot of people got to see them, and that's good. So next time they come out, they'll go, oh, or they'll go and talk to their friends and be like, hey, I went to the Funny Stop last night, and everybody was really funny. Like, nobody did bad tonight.
Well, that's always good.
Yeah. It's a good thing. It builds a scene. That's what we need.
You've never thought about going, like, Ancient Emperor and just trying to, like, strangle out all the competition, really?
It doesn't help me. It doesn't, honestly. It doesn't, I mean, not yet, anyway. Eventually. Once I
get there.
After I get all your money, when I start teaching my comedy class, then
start your own festival.
Wish that was a joke.
Wait, you get your own comedy class?
I don't, but people are asking me to do it, and I just don't know what to do because I don't want to do like, hey, this is the steps. Like, I just want to help people write, but I also, like, my time is valuable, so I need to be compensated for it, and there's like an opportunity. And I just I'm kind of having a little moral crisis. Like, should I do it or should I not do it? And if I do it, I want to do it right, and I want to do it my way. I want to make it unique and just really, really take advantage of people. Like, that's all I'm all about.
That's something like, I'm gonna help you write jokes. They're all going to me, but like, you're gonna know how to do it.
Right. I get your firstborn child. I get to sleep with your wife, and it's $550 per session.
You should take that on Shark Tank. I think they would buy that.
That's a good idea. That's
get a good Kickstarter idea. For it.
Exactly.
How would you even get a Kickstarter for a comedy class?
you tell them you need like.
I got to print flyers somehow, man.
I need to get my message to the people, and my message is that I'm better, but you could help me.
Yeah.
Get like way, way better.
Now it's one of those things where a lot of comics will shit on comedy classes, and I don't like do that. I took a comedy class. I took Mike Benjamin's class, and it helped me so much, because not just in like writing jokes and stuff, because I took it when I was already 6 months in, but just getting to go around with him a little bit and see how he composes himself and how he's able to handle any situation. Like, I saw him do crowds that were like 8 or 10 people, and he would destroy. And I did a set before him, and it was like I wasn't even there. Like, they were just staring right through me, just uncomfortable, and then he'd go up and just crush. And it was, you know, I learned that from him, and then just, you know, how to structure jokes and how to just keep churning for new tags and stuff like that. And, you know, it was $150, and it paid off 10 times over in that first year, even, because he would help me find gigs, and he was a great guy.
So you say in that first year you made $1,500?
Yeah, I think I actually did. Okay. Honestly, like I might have, because I started working the road within a year of doing comedy, and the first the 6 months after I took that class, I was featuring on the road, doing like, and that paid $500, and then I did some other stuff, and I'm just trying to go through it. I definitely made $1,500 the first year that I did comedy.
I feel like a real dick right now.
Yeah.
And my face over here dropping money on
it. I mean, I went really hard at it. Like, I did. It's not like I made it here in Cleveland. I was in My not. I grossed $1,500 in comedy. I did not net $1,500 in comedy. Did I get those right? Is that the right way you
said? Yeah, that's a way different question.
Yeah, I lost a lot of money still, but I was driving across the country doing whatever gig I could because I had that opportunity. Like, so, I was just losing money, but I was just, I didn't care because I wanted to get good at comedy.
So you had to go on the road to like get known in Cleveland?
No, I had to go on the road to get good so I could get known in Cleveland.
Okay.
So I did Mike's class after about 6 months in comedy, and then about 3 months after that, I just did a road trip across the country and just stayed wherever I had a friend that I could stay with, and I'd just do guest sets at comedy clubs or whatever in that city, and was able to get in with a couple bookers that like book like one-nighters and like smaller venues and stuff like that. And just hosting or doing like two-man like road gigs where you're the feature, but you're also there's really never a comic in front of you, so you got to do 30 up front, and it can be really tough. But if you stick to your guns and work on the material that you want to work on, you can get really good without having to do like the pandering. Hey, what's the grocery store in town that people don't go to and stuff like that. And that's I just set certain goals for myself and certain kind of. Standards where I'm like, okay, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to pander. The first 2 years, 3 years I did comedy, I was clean. Like I just did all clean material. So I got, you know, I wasn't the best, but I was proficient. Like I was able to work and not all the time, but eventually it led to more.
How long were you on the road for?
I started doing the road. I did about eight years on the road.
8 years on the road.
Yeah.
How long you been doing stand-up?
11.
11.
Yeah.
So you were doing 8 years on the road before you could like make it in Cleveland, like your hometown, to come back to?
Right. But I was, and like I had some stuff going. Like I was working in the clubs here. Like Pete was headlining me and Hilarities was featuring me and I kind of had a falling out with the improv, but they were featuring me and stuff too. And but I was, you know, headlining some B rooms and just doing it, making a living. Not the best money, but I was doing okay.
So you're saying like some good advice to give comics that are starting out, like try to go on the road, work your material there?
There's no way to do it other than however you want to do it, because I've seen guys do just as well staying here in Cleveland. And because when I started, there was like one independent room in Cleveland. So there wasn't Pete had his thing going on here, but there was only one other place you could go up and get like good stage time every week, and that was a place called Bossa Vita on like Lakewood-Cleveland border on 117th. And that was... like the first 2 years, that was like a great place to go, but then it kind of fell apart when some new owners took over, and then just went away. And then there was Chucklefuck, the coffee shop, and like that was good too. But again, like this is like once a week or something like that. So I would just go where I could, anywhere, and I didn't want to go to like New York City or L.A. or anything because I was I just wasn't ready, and I got to make money doing the road. So I just used that to just, you know, work really hard at it and get better. And eventually I did.
How did it come about with you getting that radio show on the Alan Cox Show? How'd that come about?
Just dumb luck, really, because, I mean, it's not the best story, but it's kind of hard to tell just because the reason I was even, I mean, not the only reason, but Chad Zumach was the co-host of the Alan Cox Show, and he didn't renew his contract after... he had his car crash, mistake, whatever you want to say. You know, he'll tell his version of it. I'm just trying to tell like the bare bones because I'm not trying to talk shit about anybody. But they let him go, and then they were looking for a new co-host. I had been on the comedy tour. Chad and I were friends. Alan knew who I was, and he put out some feelers to people to see who wanted to come on the show and maybe fill that spot. And Alan emailed me and said, "Do you want to audition for this?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do. And it's, you know, so it sucks because your friend, you know, he was my friend. He lost his job. It sucks. But also, it's an opportunity that I was going to take advantage of. And, I don't feel like I stabbed in the back. Alan reached out to me. I talked to Chad about it. We seemed to be cool. We talked about it. And then he just had a hard time getting over that. And you know, we both said things and did things that we weren't proud of, and I've since let it go. I don't really have any problem with him anymore. He however he feels about me is irrelevant, because I'm just not going to get into that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to feed into any of that negativity. He's not a bad guy. When it comes down to it, he does do self-destructive things. He knows that. But he's out there working, and like, people will try and talk shit, and they'll call and be like, oh, who's that guy? And it's like, you know, he's out there doing it. He works on the road with Florentine and does what he does. And, you know, it's he's going through some hard times. I'm not gonna kick him while he's down.
As the being the co-host on the Alan Cock Show up here in Cleveland on MMS, has that helped you in the comedy, like get more gigs, get your name out there?
Yeah, I get some, absolutely. Because, I mean, locally, I can do, you know, there's a good crowd here at the Funny Stop tonight. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people came out, and people come out to my shows at Barrio and Market Garden, and it's nice. And it's, you know, I'm getting a little oversaturated because I'm doing shows all the time. So I feel a lot of pressure to keep things very fresh. That's why I did the whole Perfect 10 thing last year, where I wrote 10 new minutes every month, so that every time someone would come out, they'd see me doing something new. And now I'm taking all that material and trying to whittle it down into a good hour, and then eventually I'll tape a special that I'll throw on YouTube and not many people will watch, and I'll just keep on going. You know?
Well, speaking of your Perfect 10, because I've seen you all the time on the stand-up sections on Reddit, comedy sections, and you've been doing really well on that. With the stand-up shots, I've seen you on there a lot.
Yeah, I did that real hard when it first started, because it just was such an easy way to promote yourself. I haven't done it as much now, because my style just doesn't... It's hard to get into that small meme kind of thing, mm-hmm. like to get it where it's real short and in context and it makes sense. And I was kind of writing specifically for that for a while, because it just made, you know, you'd get some heat. Like one of the jokes I did tonight, the one about my daughter working at McDonald's.
Yeah, I saw
that. That made it to the very top spot on Reddit and Imgur, and like,
I think,
you know,
that's actually like one of the top 10 jokes on stand-up.
Yeah, it's it did really well. I had three or four. I haven't checked in a while. I haven't been on there. But it was, you know, I had some that did really well, and they'll show up from time to time. People like tweet me screenshots, like, oh, I saw this on this website. And it's good because it gets my name out there. And so when that first started, there's a lot of people that are like, oh, that's dumb. That's a stupid thing to do. It takes out the delivery. I'm like, yeah, but people see your name, and, you know, even if it's five people that – out of 100 that will go and do that, that's still five more people that know who you are, and they'll figure out, oh, he's good. And in this day and age, you know, doing everything you can is how you build an audience. And the whole reason to build an audience is so you can do comedy the way you want to do it, and you don't have to rely so much on, you know, tricks or scams, or not even scams, but I don't know how to explain
it. The pandering and stuff like that?
Yeah, the pandering and just like, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. That's
sell yourself short, sell out and do all that crap.
Right. Like, you see what a guy like Louis C.K. or Bill Burr or Aziz Ansari, where they built their audience and they get to do what they want. You know, they get to release it how they want, whether it's Netflix or releasing it on their own or through Comedy Central. They're still in charge of that. They own all that stuff because they all know how to do it themselves. And that's the coolest thing about comedy right now, is you can stand up can be so self produced and self contained and at any level.
Do you think with saying that, though, because with the internet now, like you said, it's easier to get your name out there, build an audience, get noticed. Do you think that's also like a double-edged sword to say? Because a lot of people are getting offended by comics now.
Oh yeah, but the people that get offended by comics are doing the exact same thing that people that are making the stand-up shot memes are doing, is they're just trying to get attention. They're trying to get clicks to their website. No one's that offended by anything that a comic's saying, like the Trevor Noah thing,
yep.
where he got named the host of the Daily Show, and people go, okay, now what we got to do is find something controversial about him. So they start combing through all his tweets, probably doing some sort of like word search through like Trevor Noah in different races or whatever, and they found some fat jokes and some Jewish jokes.
Some of them
are
pretty funny, though.
And they're funny, and there's, you know, and even if they're not, none of them were hateful or offensive or anything that anyone should get worried about. And all it was is clickbait that gets you to go, new host of the Daily Show, anti-Semite. And people go, huh? And why would they do that? And then you click on it and you read it and you go, No.
Like Jon Stewart's going to hug a guy who hates Jewish people.
Right.
Like, that's actually going to happen.
Exactly.
Like, he's going to be in the picture, like, what's up, buddy Trevor? And Trevor's like...
No, it's just the people are trying to get, you know, the people riled up so that they can get clicks on their website and build their name as you're like, well, I was the one that found out that Trevor Noah is an anti-Semite. And then that dies down in 2 days, and it's on to the next thing. Like, who are we mad at today? It's not Trevor Noah. That was Tuesday.
That's a slow news week when you know someone's offended at a comic. I've noticed
that. Right, right. And that's the thing. Like, people were trying to get things going about the Bieber roast and how, like...
Did anybody even care about that?
No, not really. Like, there were people that cared, and, like, some of the Bieber fans were, like, doing the whole death threat thing, but... A death threat on Twitter now, if you haven't gotten one, you're really not doing your job.
Oh, I've gotten one. That's my opener. It's a pretty good one. You heard that one, right?
Yeah, I read all
Pitbull
of
Pitbull one?
Yeah, I don't.
Well, speaking of that, I've submitted to stand-up shots, and I got, like, I don't know, like 600-700 upvotes. I was on the top for a day or two.
Nice.
And I got so much hate mail for this joke. It was, during the time of Kim and Kanye announcing their kid.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote, it's illegal for two retards to have sex. Oh, no, I'm sorry, I messed it up. It's illegal to have sex with a retard, but it's not illegal for two retards to have sex. And in unrelated news, Kim and Kanye are welcoming their daughter Northwest into the world.
And people got, because you used the word retard?
Because I get all this hate mail saying you use the R word, and I linked my Twitter, and people went through my Twitter, and then they were posting it, and I'm like, dude, this is hilarious. Like, people are sending my stuff. Because I was writing, I wrote, all Ginger's boners look like Beaker from the Muppets.
Right.
That one blew up, too, and I'm like, holy shit, this is awesome.
There's these people that just all they want to do is they're called the social justice warriors. They want to just
Tumblrinas.
Yeah, they just get all mad. They get the triggers
intensifying.
Yeah, just getting all mad about stuff. And it's so silly to me because like I had a stand up shot that did really well, but it's also very controversial. It was just an old joke where I go, women don't like to be called cunt because deep down they know. It's kind of true. And, like, I did it in panels, and it was, like, coming directly from my comedy special.
Oh, yeah.
And it's you know, like, I make this face where, like, I'm smirking, obviously, to let you know this is not how I actually feel. This is a joke. And it got, like, 700 or 800 upvotes.
That's good.
But it had, like, 5,000 upvotes and, like, 4,300 downvotes, and then comments just for days. Like, I looked at it once, and then I'm like, oh, can't look at this again. And just all the death threats, and you're the worst, and everyone hates you. And I went back and forth with a couple of people. They're like, obviously no one's responding to this. I'm like, obviously you are not understanding what's happening here, because everyone's responding to this.
I think I saw you do that, because didn't you post a link on YouTube?
Yeah.
So you could show the context.
Yeah, I'm like, watch the whole bit. No, nobody ever wants context. They just want, at least those people that get upset about things, they never want context. They just want to make their point. They're not at all worried about anyone else's point of view. It's just, I'm right, you're wrong, fuck you.
That's kind of silly, because people like do that. Because like comedy doesn't, live stand-up comedy does not exist without an audience.
Right.
A lot of people now, like, everybody has a voice now. So I could watch you, if I didn't know you, I could watch you and be like, I disagree. Mm-hmm. When you're a closer. The autism bit. That's funny.
It is funny.
It's funny. And contextually, it's not mean to autistic people or anything.
Right.
It's hilarious. But I could, like, pinpoint that one thing, go on Twitter, and just bash you.
Right.
But you need
autism and fat people. And, like, there's all these different things. And people could do that. And eventually they will. Like, someone will get mad at something I say. And I'll just have to go, it's a joke. And then people go, well, some things aren't worth joking about. Some things you have to... And like, in your opinion, yes. But in my opinion, I think we should joke about everything. I have a bit about how the upside of cancer that I worked really hard to make funny. And sometimes people will be really uncomfortable with that bit. And then other times people go crazy for it. Mm-hmm. And I just... It's fine. No one gets hurt because it's just... jokes. And when people say, well, that hurt my feelings, or that is, you know, holding us back as a culture, it's wrong, because it doesn't. Not jokes don't do that. Real opinions do that. Hate
does that.
You're not on the news saying it. You're not
right.
Like an anchor. Like
I'm not
just
preaching
it.
I'm saying it in the context of this is a different point of view to like the cancer bit is to say, okay, cancer's terrible. We know that. But let's try and find something about it that can be good. And the idea is that when you have cancer, you get cancer panic and you want to do something with your life before you die. And really, that's not about cancer. It's about living your life and like making something of it. I just use cancer to kind of frame it and make people go, huh? And then they actually have to listen to what I'm saying and not just the words that can find offensive.
You ever had anybody like get mad at you for that? Like heckle you?
Oh yeah. Oh, like I did that at the Hilarities Christmas.
Is that the one you dressed up as Santa Claus?
Yeah, it was not that one. It was the year before or the year after that. It was when I started doing the Perfect 10 and I was working on all this material and I just was really locked into that cancer bit because I knew it was going to take a long time to figure out how to tell that joke. And so every time I went on stage for a good like 2 months, I would do that bit until I got it good. And it was like the Hilarities Home for the Holiday special show where it's like 10 or 12 comics and everybody goes up and does like 6 or 7 minutes and they do their best material. And so everyone's just like fucking crushing, just killing it. And I just go up and be like, all right, guys, remember how funny they were? Well, I'm going to talk about cancer. Just stay with me. No one stayed with me. It did not go well. It was hilarious to me at the time. But what are you going to do?
Did you, a lot of people may not know this about you. I know you talk about it on stage a lot, but you used to be a Mormon missionary?
Yeah, I was raised Mormon, missionary, did the mission thing I was sent home 1 week early.
Why is that?
For disobedience because I was, kind of breaking all the rules.
You weren't wearing your magic underwear?
No, I was wearing it because I didn't have any other underwear, but I was having sex with girls, drinking and just, you know, having fun.
But you're not allowed to drink or have sex with ladies?
Nah, not when you're Mormon. No, it's strict, especially when you're missionaries. Missionaries can't even, like, listen to music and watch TV or any of that shit. So, like, definitely not supposed to have sex with girls. Like, if Mormons are very adamant about no sex before marriage or shit like that. Like, none of that. Like, you're supposed to wait till you're married to have sex. No drinking at all. Very, very strict religion.
So your dad and moms are all Mormon?
Yes, my dad and moms are all Mormon. Just my one mom. I don't actually have multiple moms. But, yeah, they're Mormon. And my older two brothers are Mormon. And then me, my younger sister, and my brother, youngest brother, aren't Mormon anymore.
Wait, how many siblings do you have?
There's 5 of us total.
So there's 5 of you guys. You said you and your younger sister or younger brother, was it?
Yeah, the bottom, me, my younger sister, and my younger brother aren't Mormon. And then my two older brothers are still Mormon. And
so you still talk to them?
Yeah, we still talk to them. Like, I mean, I have a good relationship with my mom and my dad. My older brothers, like, we're fine. Like, we don't have anything against them. They just live far away, and I don't really go. I mean, I barely talk to my wife and kids, so I don't go out of my way to talk to anyone else. Like, I'm just always busy, so.
So your family was okay with you, like, being shunned from the religion?
No, they were not okay with it, but eventually, you know, they got over it because they're really good people. Like, they're not bad people. They're really great people that just believe things that I disagree with. And
no. Were you a Mormon before, or after, or during starting stand-up?
I was Mormon when I first started, like, because I had just gotten excommunicated from the church where I was living with my parents. So I was just trying to find my way, and I didn't know what to do. So I was just still kind of like going through this repentance process to try and make things better with them because I didn't know how to break away from the church. And then after about a year, I moved out on my own. And from the day I moved out, like I actually gave a speech at church. And then I moved into my little tiny Tremont apartment in Cleveland and never went back to church again. Like, that was the last time I ever went to church was the day I moved out of my parents' house.
Was there any, like, culture shock? Were you around a lot of different types of people growing
up?
Yeah,
because, you know, there's not a lot of Mormons around Cleveland. So most of my friends were regular kids. Like, so I was living, like, a double life where be this good Mormon kid around my parents and then go out and do what I wanted to do, which was never really drugs or anything like that. Like, I didn't do drugs until I was older or drink. Like, I drank my first alcohol ever while I was a missionary. I had sex for the first time while I was a missionary. Like, that's when I kind of lost my mind. But before that, it was just mostly, like, just doing stuff that I thought was funny.
Like, I liked watching funny movies, and we're not supposed to watch rated R movies, and I loved rated R movies because they're funny.
Sounds like your room, Springer.
Yeah, basically. I was watching rated R movies, and I swore there was a few other Mormon kids in our school, and like when they found out that I swore, they're like, "Oh my God, Bill's a bad Mormon. He swears."
You might know this from being raised Mormon. Over in Utah is where they're based, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of
John Smith.
Joseph Smith was the founder, and then Brigham Young took him all the way to Utah.
Okay, I know that's where Family Video came from.
Oh yeah,
you didn't know that?
I did not know that.
Family Video, all the ones across the country, like they're huge here.
Yeah.
Family Video started there, or it may not have started there, but I know it was like a competition, a rival to this guy that was bootlegging movies for Mormons.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know that.
About
yeah.
Documentary.
Puma, I think it's called Puma Video
or something like that.
Or Cougar Video, because it was in Provo, and they would take rated R movies, and then they would edit out the bad parts so that Mormons could watch them.
Did you ever see the documentary on that?
No, it sounds awesome.
The dude that started all that, doing all the editing and stuff, ended up being a child molester.
Of course,
don't figure.
I swear to you, he's like, yeah, dude, that's wild stuff. And that's Family Video. And the funny thing is, Family Video started as like a rival thing to this other guy that was selling videos to Mormons.
Sticking it to the Mormons.
Well, no, he was trying to like capitalize on it. And then I don't know if you know, so you go to Family Video, you can rent pornography.
Yep. And that's because there's, money.
Money wins.
Money wins over God all the time.
That sounds like a comedian says that we kind of know around here, a local comedian.
I don't know who you're.
God over money. Be blessed.
Oh, okay. All right. We're good enough.
He should pitch that to Family Video as their new slogan. G-O-M-B, be blessed, S-B.
G-O-M Video.
Yeah, that should be a good one. But we want to ask you. We always ask our guests, so it's all the time. We want to know, like,
Every time.
What's the one gig that sticks in your head that could be like the worst one, the craziest? Something bad happened.
You know, I'll tell you a story that happened right here at the Funny Stop. I was hosting, and I have a bit of a short fuse from time to time, and this lady was on her phone, and it was making me crazy because like she was just talking to her babysitter. Her kids were being assholes. I get it now, but at the time, I was hosting the show, and, you know, it was my time. I was, like, new into comedy. I wanted to do a good job. And this lady was on the phone, and I was just kind of, like, making these, like, snippy remarks. I'm like, yeah, just be on your phone. It's no big deal. I'm not doing comedy up here or whatever. And then she finally hangs up the phone. She's like, this guy's not funny anyway. I go, listen, bitch. I'm funny, all right? I'm fucking funny. I know I'm funny. Like, that's the one, like, you want to get me? Call me not funny. Don't. That's how you get under my skin. I'm getting better at it. I haven't let it.
Was there any reaction from the owner to that?
I know Pete was. I didn't give a fuck. She was like, and then like bad was bad for a minute, and then I got everybody back, and I closed on my fat jokes about like having stretch marks that look like flames or whatever, and she laughed at that. And I go, ha! I knew that's funny. So I kind of threw it back in her face. And that's one of my favorites.
So you just said, like, we ask every guest on here that, and every comedian that has said that has always said when you get heckled, try not to fight them, get the audience on your side.
Yeah.
Basically laugh at them and enjoy what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because I've seen a lot of new comics. I mean, hell, I did it for a while. Like, if somebody did that, I would confront them and just try to be the biggest dick and asshole. Not be funny, you know?
Right.
So you say that's some good advice you would say then?
I mean, it can go either way if that's your thing too. Like if you're good at dealing with hecklers and you're good at coming up with stuff, then yeah, get people on your side. Otherwise, or if you just want, you know, it depends on the night. Sometimes you just don't want to deal with it. You're just like, dude, shut up and just keep going. Like someone tonight when I did that Pittsburgh Steelers joke, they were yelling stuff out and I just ignored it because I wanted to get through the bit because I'm not worried about going off on a tangent for anything other than what I wanted to do at that moment. Everybody else was into it. No one really cared what she said, so I just kept going. And, you know, it just all depends.
So that's some advice if you ever go to a comedy show. Don't heckle. You're not making the show better.
No, you're not making the show better. Now, I do like to do crowd work, though. Like, crowd work can be really fun. Like, if I'm engaging you, I want you to give me what you got. Like, go for it. Like, if I start it, you can go at me because I brought it, and I'm trying to – when I do crowd work, I like having a back and forth. I want the crowd to be just as engaged, and I only do it when it's like a smaller crowd and, you know, you need to manufacture some energy somehow. I don't like to do crowd work when people in the back can't see what's going on in the front. But if it's like, you know, a half full room, it's fun.
You ever had somebody that replies to you on stage, like actually doing a bit, hypothetically, they think it's about them?
Yeah, you get that a lot. And usually I'll just ignore it, because once you ignore it, then they realize that they're not part of the show. But or you just address it in like a way like, I'm not actually talking to you. There's like a lot of people here, and you just like kind of do it in a way that makes them feel kind of stupid, like you said, and not even like hurtful, but just like, buddy, just, you know, you're messing up the timing, so just shh, be quiet.
Yeah,
enjoy the show.
Exactly. Well, but we're getting ready to get out of here. Before we go, though, do you have anything you want to plug coming up?
Alan Cox Show Comedy Tour. Anybody wants to come to that? There's still tickets for sale.
The most unenthusiastic thing I've ever heard.
I have a lot of shows. Actually, you know what? I got another show. When is this going to come out?
Devin?
I don't know. I'll probably put it out Monday.
Monday? Okay. April 17th, I'm doing a show at the Natural History Museum in Cleveland. And this friend of mine, Stuart Huff, who's a really, really funny, clever, unique comedian, is headlining it. And I'm going to... I got guys to come and film it, and we're going to try and do a comedy special with it. So it also benefits. It's a benefit for like a fundraiser for the Natural History Museum, and it gets to be a DVD taping for this dude, and I think it's going to be really fun. So if anybody wants to come out to that, you can go to my website. It's got a link to buy tickets. And
what's your website?
BillSquire.com.
What's your Twitter?
At BillSquire. Instagram at BillSquire. Just search BillSquire for my Facebook fan page, and that's it.
Oh, when can we hear you? For that Funny Stop podcast bump you're definitely going to get.
Yeah, right.
Big numbers coming.
And when can we hear you on the Alan Cox Show?
Mondays through Fridays, 3 to 7 on WMMS 100.7.
Boom!
Cool. All right, I just want to throw this out there. This is the third podcast in a row that we have mentioned retards, so I just want to put that out there. Good job, us.
It's low-hanging fruit for me.
Yeah. No, it comes up. All right, I guess come to the Funny Stop. It's 1757 State Road, Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. The phone number is 330-973-4700. Like I said.
330-973-4700. Come on, you got to get that one.
All right.
You want to be...
What did you say, Pete?
I said 923, so let's get past it. 923-4700. FunnyStop.com is the website. Cool, we're done.
Yeah.